out there. AGP is ready, and so I guess we're ready. Stephen Provo is here from the Cambrian, so we know we're going to get all the news that's fit to print from this particular event tonight and next week's edition. Obviously, most of you know that I'm Harry Farmer, and I was fortunate enough to connect with Mr. Flores, and he was more than willing to come down here and talk with all of us, the community members of Cambria, and give us an update as to what's happening in Sacramento with regard to what can be of advantage financially and otherwise to the community of Cambria. So I want to thank all of you for being here. It looks like a couple of dozen people, maybe more. And don't forget that it's not just your appearance here, but your ultimate participation, just your interest and involvement that's really going to make this as much of a success as what Dean is going to be presenting. We have slips out there in the lobby. I would encourage you all, either right now or during the course of Mr. Flores' presentation, to go out there and write up a question, put your name on it, please, and you can just deliver it over here to me. I'll be sitting here. You can just put it right there, and then we can ask those questions afterward. And also, we're hoping that after the written questions, and hopefully there will be some, that we'll actually have the opportunity to folks just to ask questions from the audience that will be obviously a little bit more spontaneous and just make it maybe even more lively. Who knows? But for right now, I'd like to introduce our guest for the evening. He's a former assemblyman and state senator in our state capitol. He's currently the president of Balanced Public Relations. He's our advocate and lobbyist in Sacramento. Let's have a warm, cordial Cambria welcome for Mr. Dean Flores.
Hi, everyone. Thank you. And thank you, Harry, for putting this together. And I hope this won't be the first or last time we have an opportunity to chat. But I'm going to get a little organized here because I know I have a PowerPoint behind me. And normally it's in front of me. So rather than me keep turning my head, I'm going to look at my iPad as I do this. Just a little bit of background for those of you who, beyond just the assemblyman and the senator and all those good titles. So I was, a little background on me, I was born and raised in Shafter, California, which is the stone throw down 46, right past Wasco. So just to give you a little clue about that. So I believe we've been in Shafter for 100 years. So my grandparents were born and raised in Shafter. My parents were born and raised in Shafter. I was born and raised in Shafter. We all went to Shafter High School, one high school town. My son went to high school there, so, and we escaped to L.A., and my daughter goes to school in L.A., so she's kind of the opposite. But I just want you to know I was born and raised in the Central Valley. I attended Shafter High School. I was not the greatest student, believe it or not. I went to Bakersfield Community College, and I transferred from Bakersfield Community College to UCLA. So that was kind of my path to UCLA. Student body president at UCLA, got very involved. That's kind of my path to politics. People may not know that. So I actually got involved in student politics at UCLA and ended up getting a Senate fellowship to work for a state senator named Art Torres in Sacramento. So I left UCLA to do, I promised a one-year stint at the state capitol in the late 80s and ended up staying there 4 years. So 1 year turned into two and three. I became a chief of staff to Senator Torres. I also became the chief budget consultant to the state Senate at a pretty young age. And pretty much got tired of politics and decided I would go get an MBA at the only school at that time that did not take a standardized test, which was Harvard Business School. And I got in. And so I went to Harvard Business School, got my MBA, and decided that I was going to be a municipal finance banker. So as you know, that meant helping cities and counties and special districts and others find financial paths to some of their problems. Moved from Boston to Los Angeles, thankfully. The first time I'd ever been on the East Coast was when I went to Harvard, and it was a very fast 2 years, and I was right back in Los Angeles. And I spent time there working for a firm, Pryor MacLellan Cownson Company, a regional firm focused on 87 cities around LA County. So although we didn't focus on LA County or LA City or the massive MTA, we focused on the 87 little small cities within LA County. So that was kind of our specialty. We did all sorts of bonds and bond financings. Somewhere in the midst of that, I decided to create my own company, and I was hired by cities to pick the financial advisors for those cities. So we did a lot of structured finance for those cities and counties, and had a few water districts at that point in time in our firm. And for some reason, in the late 90s, I decided I wanted to run for politics. So I moved back to Shafter and ran in a, as you know, Kern County is a bit conservative, and I ran in a, against an incumbent in Shafter, or in Kern County, and the district was Fresno, Tulare, Kings, and Kern County, and I won. So ended up living in Shafter, serving in the state assembly. Just so you know what I did in the assembly, I chaired the banking committee for a good many years, I chaired the water committee for a good many years, chaired the Ag Committee for a good many years, and I moved on to the State Senate. In the State Senate, I chaired the Banking Committee, the Ag Committee, and the Water Committee, not surprisingly, and then I ended up being chosen as Senate Majority Leader of the California State Senate. And before I knew it, it was term limits, and if you've ever been termed out of office at the grand age of 42, you know you want to keep doing something in public policy. You know you want to keep working. You want to find solutions. And so out of that, I went to work for a foundation. The foundation was centered on how to create free textbooks for community college students, because as you probably know, a textbook costs more than a course at California community colleges. And I did that for about 3 years. And I decided to create my firm. And my firm's genesis, just so you know, Balance, I named my firm Balance just for a reason, and that was to try to balance family and business. Everyone thinks it's some financial firm, but really it was really to remind myself that there's a kind of a balance in the world. So I created my firm just at about the time the drought had really hit California, and some of my clients at that time, as you can guess, were some of the larger rural water districts in the Central Valley. So my clients then, and my clients continue to be as well, places like Semi-Tropic Water District, which is obviously in the midst of the water fix, and I'll probably talk a little bit about that tonight and what it means for California. But most of that centered back to my municipal finance days. So mostly water was kind of the basis. I was very fortunate at that time to get hired by your district. Most of what I was hired for at that time was to deal with the sustainable water facility or the emergency water facility. And most of that was really about trying to find solutions for the district. So that's a little bit of history about myself. Just so you know, family-wise, my wife, it was from Los Angeles when I met her. She then found herself in Shafter, California for about 16 years. And my only promise during the campaign and out of politics was I had to move back to L.A. So that's actually why I'm in L.A. She's an L.A. person, and so now we find ourselves back in Los Angeles. My daughter is probably the only one in our family that did not go to Shafter High School. But my daughter has just graduated or graduating this year as a senior. She just broke my heart and told me she was going to go to USC. And for a UCLA guy, that's kind of a shocker, you know. So she will be attending that next fall, so that's kind of an interesting thing. But nonetheless, so I do find my place, my normal path is somewhere between Los Angeles, Sacramento, Shafter, Bakersfield, and the coast. And so I do quite a bit of work. I should also tell you I do a bit of work for San Luis Obispo City as they're trying to figure out some of their unique needs on energy. So I also do a little bit of consulting there. So I find myself in kind of a circled area. You won't find me in San Diego, and you won't find me in San Francisco, and I probably won't be anywhere near anywhere else other than this circle. So that's kind of my path here. As I mentioned, I want to go to the first slide, Monique. I don't know if you have that. I have it. Okay. So. No, I'll do it. It's It's on the side.
Yeah, it's like a little cut
arm. This? Yeah. Yay. Okay. So I want to start a little bit about how, when I got to Cambridge, a little bit about the scope of work and kind of the things that I currently have in place legally and structurally with the district. So I think it's always a good place to start on what are you supposed to be doing. And I always kind of go back to the documents and say, what was I hired to do? And so I want to kind of just go through these and give you my interpretation of each of these, if that's okay with you. So first and foremost, the issue obviously was trying to figure out not just the emergency water system, but all of the permitting and things that go behind that, that aren't, believe it or not, just at San Luis Obispo County. These permitting issues go far beyond the local. So they go all the way to Sacramento. So in some points, if you're talking to parks, you're talking to parks here, but you also are talking to parks in Sacramento. If you're talking about you know, any sort of permitting issue, you're talking to folks locally, but you're also, believe it or not, talking to Sacramento. So I think, you know, when I say we do general permitting and water and wastewater issues, most of what I try to do is make sure that people understand that although your GM is working every single day and the board, sometimes at a local level, a lot of that transcends up to the state level. So we do quite a bit of that. And strategic advisory means it can be as simple as we got our grant approved, our check is stuck. How do we get it out? Because we need to make sure it kind of hits our books at a, in a timely manner. So all of that kind of is kind of things that, that I've done. The other issue was to identify grant opportunities, particularly in the recycled waterfront. So you should know when Prop 1 passed, the bond, there's very many silos of funding, anything from water storage to water recycling to you name it. I mean, it was basically a cadre of financing. So what we've done for the district is try to identify various nodes of financing that would enhance various projects within the district. A lot of that is centers around water recycling, and I would probably tell you as we go further in the presentation tonight, there are more opportunities going forward. The other thing I'm to do for the district is try to look at refinance opportunities. As you know, at the time that you had the drought, the time that the emergency facility was asked to be built, it was a very quick timeline. There was a need to go not necessarily to normal municipal finance mechanisms until you got kind of the standard business bank loan. So the goal is to try to find bank notes and things of that sort and try to refinance those at rates that the state can offer. So in a little bit, I'll talk about the iBank, what the state can offer, and how that's kind of a restructuring opportunity. The other thing that I do is I do talk to quite a few people, and we are constantly talking about your sustainable water facility, trying to educate people on what it is and what it isn't, what it's going to achieve and what it is supposed to achieve, and in some sense try to dispel some issues that have surrounded it. And so I do a lot of strategic communication. That would mean water commissioners. That would mean anyone from Felicia Marcus all the way down to the Coastal Commission. So do a lot of education on that front. And then the other, these are two kind of new things, but one had always been that I'd kind of give small reports, legislative reports, to the board periodically, kind of how things are going in Sacramento and things that people should be concerned with. The board felt, and I think it was a good decision, I believe a year ago or somewhere in this year, to extend that to a full reporting lobby approach. So in other words, if there are things that I was going to be advocating for, then we should obviously register as a lobbyist and make sure those are reportable. So that was a board directive, a good directive, and I think it's brought a lot of transparency to kind of the things that that I'm doing in Sacramento. So I basically have now put here a lobbying on priority bills affecting the district. So that's the scope of work. Does anybody have any questions rather than me just kind of go through this on the scope, or any questions on this particular item? No? Okay. We can go back if there are, but let's go to Wow, that was a fast presentation. Can you guys reset it? For, you know, I'm not How do I kind of get the full screen up again? Okay. Awesome. Thank you. No, I got it. Yeah, I know. Okay, sorry, thank you. As you can see, I probably don't work for a lot of technology companies. I'm kind of a little lost on that. So any questions? Did you have a question? Yes.
Yes, you said you're doing a lot of educating
about what's sustainable water project, but really don't need the emergency water project. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it is simply trying to figure out ultimately when people ask at the state level, you know, what is the project? What is the status of the project? Where's the project going? I normally kind of report the status. So in other words, the state asked and complied, and the Department of the State Office of Research all supported this. It got built. There's times where it's going to go on and off. And I think sometimes people have questions, particularly as we seek the regular permit. Most of what I do is talk to folks about kind of where we're at and the status of it. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. The question is, and I'm going to try to put it in the right context. There was a bait and switch that turned from a emergency water system to a That's okay. Yeah. Sure. Oh, the growth, right? Well, I'll be very blunt. I always talk about this project as not a growth mechanism. So if you look at what San Luis Obispo regulations are, if you look at kind of what this town's own regulations are in terms of growth, it's pretty locked in. So I think how I present it is that whatever this facility, whatever camps, if you put it, you know, wherever people fall on it, there are still these outside forces that limit growth, even beyond the facility itself. So the facility isn't going to, in my mind, create growth. It doesn't on its own supersede the county's ordinances. It doesn't supersede the town's wishes. I think what it does, it simply says that for those who do live here, that they'll have hopefully, you know, some water.
Well, that's the original
mission. Well, that's how so you've asked how I present it. So that's kind of how I see it. I definitely don't feel, I'll just give you, so my part of my job is to talk to policymakers. So I want to be very clear that I don't think I know a policymaker in Sacramento, at least in the party in power, that wants growth, and particularly in the coast. So I would be doing you all a disfavor if I walked in and said, this is going to be awesome because it's going to allow the town to grow. I mean, I present this as I believe what it is, which is simply for those who live in the town, that emergency facility that allows the town to not run out of water, not grow. If I said this allows the town to grow, we might as well pack it up. Because Coastal Commission and others, this is not kind of the flavor of where the Coastal Commission's going. Yes?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
That's okay, Ari.
Oh,
yeah. Microphone would be good. That way people can hear.
All right.
I don't think it's on. Is it? Yeah, it's on
it
now.
It is on.
So I'm going to piggyback on Jeff's.
Sure.
So,
absolutely.
And what you also said, Dean, and that is if it was established as an emergency water supply project.
Correct.
For current residents in times of drought.
Correct.
Then why is it necessary to change the name, not just once, but we have the Adaptive Water Management Plan,
yeah,
the EWS, the EWP, the EWF. I mean, you could go on and on. There are like four or five names. So why is it necessary to do that if what you've just said isn't necessary? I'm confused about that.
It's a very good question, and I'll give you my perspective on it. I'm not your board, but I'll give you my perspective on it. I think when I say the word, and I like the branding of sustainable, and the reason for that is when you're seeking grants or you're seeking finance, people normally don't want to finance periodic, intermittent, emergency, might go on, might go off, no revenue stream projects. So I think from a lowering the cost of projects, this is my perspective only, lowering the cost of capital, which I think hopefully everybody would like to do here. I mean, if you don't have to pay 5% for something that's operating, you pay 1%. That only saves rates and a whole bunch of other things. But by calling it sustainable, it basically, in my mind, tells most of the bond folks, the financing folks, the folks in Sacramento, that this is not a hit and miss. Cambria is fine. Let's move forward. And if they ever run out of water again, it kind of says that this is going to be part and parcel of the community in these types of situations. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to run 24/7, but it does connotate to finance, particularly those who are trying to structure these things, that having something that is viable, sustainable, that is something I think offers a little better. That's just how I view it. Well, yeah. No, not well. I won't disagree. But I think the state, particularly the governor's office and the Office of Research, at the point of time where this community was running out of or low or didn't seem like it was going to make it past this critical point, the state is always going to step in with some temporary grant dollars. It's just kind of what it does. The problem with the state is it goes, good luck, and life goes on, and they move on. So I think what I find, at least in this conversation from the board to Sacramento, is this is an ongoing fix in those situations, still intermittent. I mean, it's not like it's running 24/7, but it does say that it's financeable to a point that you just, the state isn't going to kind of start and stop it. So in other words, you kind of get a little drop of money, everything seems fine, which the state is doing now, which they shouldn't have. Like, we're out of drought, let's take away the regs, let's go back to normal. Nobody should have done that. But, and then they find ourselves in, well, we're at 50% capacity now, or we should. So Canberra gets to a point where we've built this, right? You're still paying 5%, a lot, trying to restructure that with staff and others. But I think the point is, if we could lower that to a 1% or zero interest rate, the only people that want to finance something like that at the state truly is this an ongoing part of the community? Doesn't mean it's a growth mechanism, but is this an ongoing functioning entity that is worthy of putting out 30-year financing? Like, if you want a 20 to 30-year refi, they don't want to hear it's emergency, because that means something different to them. When you're saying it is part of the ongoing community. Now, I understand the growth issue. I mean, that's where I think everybody gets a little worried, right? Like, ongoing means it's running. That means it must be running all the time, and it means it must be kind of a catalyst to growth. I think the way we explain it to the state and the way I've talked about this is that it just means that it's not just kind of a hit and miss. Like, we took your Prop 84 dollars and your grant and we're all good and we'll never come back to you ever again. That's worrisome. So for me, if we can kind of combine financing to make this an ongoing part. Now, the fight on growth is a fight. But I don't think the facility is the catalyst for that. I think the facility simply offers continuity, a sustainable way for the community to operate and to live, and it isn't intermittent, on, off with financing. On, off on operations is one thing, but on and off on financing is another. Yeah. Sure.
I think the issue, and what certainly bothers me, is that the use of sustainable in this context is really not a very realistic thing, mm-hmm. because A, right now it isn't sustainable, it doesn't produce anything, mm-hmm. but I'd like you to, I understand what you're saying, mm-hmm. that the facility is not something that would be used for just a single emergency, but it doesn't therefore follow, and it kind of sounded like you were kind of talking kind of around the issue, mm-hmm. that we couldn't really get financing unless we somehow indicated that we would be running it all the time. Now, you actually didn't say that, but you did imply it. Mm-hmm. So what I'd like to know is, supposing that we could throw the word sustainable out, mm-hmm. is there another name for this thing that would be more realistic? Sustainable is something that's normally used if we talk about sustainable yeah. development or sustainable this. I'm not seeing any way at all in which this facility is sustainable anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's only sustainable if there's power. It's only sustainable if there's water. So, and yet I know what you mean. It's not like we're going to run this year and never mm-hmm. again, right?
I am agnostic to any word you'd like the board would like to use. I mean, but for me,
because you're telling other people, so
yeah.
I want to know what you would be telling other people that is not misleading them into thinking that we're really going to run this facility all the time. I'd like to know how you yourself,
okay,
if the board said, please don't use the word sustainable, what would you do? I'm not saying that you should.
Well,
I'd like to hear you work around that.
Yeah. Well, one, I wasn't working around it. I'm pretty straightforward. So let me be more specific with you. One, I'll use any word the board would want me to use. I do know who I work for. Number two is the word sustainable. Doesn't necessarily mislead folks to say that it's running 24/7. Peaker plants in California are sustainable projects. They're peaker plants. They only operate at the various times when there's intermittent energy problems, but they are sustainable. So, I mean, I kind of look at this as, I mean, you can call them peaker water plant. I mean, you could call them anything you want, but I guess the point is, I don't think I've ever characterized this as a 24/7 operation that runs. That the word, the context of sustainable to me means it that these are projects that the state would finance over a period of time, and I would ask the community, for example, would the community want a spike in rates at the only time that you ran it, and then a drop, a significant drop at times it didn't? Okay, well then, then we're on the same side. So what we're trying to do then is even out the financing at a much lower rate so that ultimately, even though it may not be running, you're paying a much lower amount of dollars over the course of a certain period of time. And that's what I think is kind of the sustainable language. I'm agnostic to, if there's a better word, I'm agnostic to it, but I will tell you that, I know our GM's there, here. So I would say that as I've explained this from a financing point of view, I think sustainable means from a financing point of view, you're not going to see us again. I mean, if you don't want to see us again, give us longer term 1% over 20 years, lower rates, because you're still going to be paying for it. The question is, how would you like to pay for it? In an intermittent higher environment or a more stable, longer-term environment? Just that's how I view it. Sure.
Just a moment. Just a moment, please. I just kind of want to intercede here for a moment. Dean inadvertently said, are there any questions from the audience?
I'm sorry. I'm used to this format, so right. I'm fairly comfortable with it. I'll get back to my presentation, I promise.
Yeah.
But I actually like the questions because I think that feeds into more questions, and then we get to some point where everybody goes, okay, we either settled that issue or we need to figure out, we're off not doing something different. So I actually, if it's okay, Harry, we won't go on all night on this one topic, but it is an important topic. And I understand the significance of it, so I don't mind. And I will get back to.
Well, let me just say this: everybody in this room, whether they voted for me or not, knows how I feel about the facility. So I'm not trying to prevent us from asking questions. I was just trying to.
Yes, I promise I'll get back. But I do think these are very vital questions because I think to make sure everybody understands the context of this, we got on this because somebody asked, when you're educating people, what are you saying? A very valid point. And so I think we should stay on this for a little bit, and then we'll keep going, and then probably I'll say something else that'll pique your interest, and then we'll kind of have more conversations. Yeah.
Hi. I must be wrong about this, but I believe that this project was denied conventional financing from the beginning. Now, has something happened to make it more financeable?
Well,
maybe just a name change will work.
No, it's not. Well, I'm not. I would say a little both. So let me start at the back end. The name change connotes a better opportunity to find financing over a longer term than what you just said at the very beginning, which is an unfinanceable, very high expensive project that needed to be built very quickly. Now, if you want to debate should it have been built or not, I'm not your person to answer that question. When I got here, it was, and my issue was, and I think from the board's perspective is, you know, how do we even this out, and how do we still keep it as intermittent? So it isn't like this ongoing project, but yet still finance it over the long term. So I would say that I can see already in the room a little bit of worry about the project itself and how long it's going to run. And if you don't like the project, you probably don't want 20-year financing because you'd probably like it to just end. But then when the community runs out of water and you go back to Sacramento, I'm telling you what they're going to say is that, you know, we did that once. And then what are you going to, you know, that's probably what they're going to do. And I think the non-conventional financing that you got is something that we're attempting to fix. So, yeah.
Excuse me, I have a question right here. Now, I kind of dropped the ball here. For those of you that are asking questions, if you'd give your name first.
Yeah.
I think it'd be much appreciated. Thank you.
And if you live here, no, I'm kidding. I'm just joking. Okay.
Thank you. My name is Mike Lyons. I'm very much appreciative of your educating me today because I never had actually considered that a big part of this is financing, and it's a great incentive to move from a high percentage to a much lower one. We're always looking for money.
Yeah,
we're always looking for grant money.
Yeah,
and this has broadened my mind considerably. I agree that the idea of whether we shouldn't be debating whether we should or shouldn't have done it. I'm glad to have this conversation with you about financing. We're always looking for new angles on there. I would like to say that, despite what you've heard so far, not everyone in the community objects to the word sustainable. Mm-hmm. If it is of use to you in your search for public funding, I think that's a big plus. I actually do feel that the project can be sustainable because if we run out of water and we didn't have that facility out there, no matter what you call it, life here would not be sustainable.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important word to use. Thank you.
Thanks. It's not my word, just so everybody... it can be any word that connotes to a financer that there is an ongoing path to financing this project. You know, that's the key. It could be, I mean, I you know, it just seemed to me that seemed to be one of the better terms. Yes.
Mel Doran, I do live here. I'd like to correct something you said before.
Sure.
When Cambria runs out of water, again, was a phrase you used. Correct me if I'm wrong. We've never run out of water.
No, I didn't say that. I said that the state isn't less likely.
Well, it was a little while before that.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, we were actually giving it away at one point to gardeners for free.
Uh-huh.
We had so much of it.
Okay. And you'll, you know...
We conserved 43%, which was twice the state average.
Yeah, you were the number one. You beat
right.
Bill Monning's community.
So we're operating under the
right.
present.
Yeah.
Yeah. The condition here is that we're going to run out of water, and I have to disagree with that. We can conserve our way out of this. Yeah.
And I would say that... the state is moving very heavily now as this wake-up call that we never should have gone out of dropped other areas, not your area, other conditions. So I would agree with you there. And I just wanted to make sure I connoted that I think the state is somewhat fickle about what it finances and what it doesn't. And there was a unique window for this community to receive that financing. And I'm maybe because I've been a little jaded being up there, but I think those windows are very few, hard to come by sometimes.
Okay, I have a question. My name is John Martinez.
Hi, John.
In Cambria.
Hi.
So we hired you for financing. Is that kind of really the general thing, if you had to answer it in one sentence?
No, I think I laid out five things, but I think we got caught a little bit on the when you're educating on the sustainable facility. Two things on that. One is trying to find a lower cost of capital. Yes, that's what I'm doing.
We're kind of locked into a loan that we signed.
Yeah, let's get out of it.
I don't think there's a lot of options.
No, there's a lot of options.
Well, but I think there's a lot of prepayment penalties built into the thing.
There are, but you
poison pills that are going to cause us to pay 10 years of interest or whatever it is. I'm not familiar with what the numbers is, but I know it's more than get out of jail easy.
Yeah.
When will your job be done with this? Are we just going to pay you, $7,500 a month or $8,000 a month in perpetuity? What is it that you see that you will have accomplished for our town?
Yeah.
Where you've achieved what you were hired to do, or were you hired to do just those five things and continue to do them forever?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I believe my job is probably over when you get your regular permit, and that'll be it. So I hope that answers your question, but that's pretty much it. You know, I don't. I'm sorry, I don't have, I really don't. I think there are a lot of moving parts. I think that the Coastal Commission has its own cadence. I think that the district is on a path, a much better and quicker path, by the way, than it has. It's done more in a year and a half, I think, of getting that through the county. And I expect the Coastal Commission to have this rather soon. I think what slows it down are little nicks and kicks and things in the process that slow it down to a point where it almost becomes slower because of, rightfully, of objections and things of that sort. I mean, the public has a right to object. They have a right to slow things down. They have a right for more information. But the more that occurs, the slower the process. Slower the process is a lot harder to get to the Coastal Commission. Yeah.
And all the props have been, you can't do this. We should have known we couldn't do it before we did it. That
pond is the Doug Pond, the glowing
example.
Yeah. It did happen quick. I wouldn't just say that it was a priority of the district to make it happen that quick, but I do think the governor's office and the Office of Research and just about a good portion of people in Sacramento didn't want this community to run out of water. I know, but they... Right.
I wish you wouldn't use those words.
Right.
We did run out of water. We never got close to running out of water.
Okay.
We conserved our way out of it.
Okay.
And we haven't been anywhere close to running out of water. We have a worse
drought. Well, I can guarantee you one thing. If that is true, and I'm just going to, on face value...
Well, you can just look at the...
No, but I'm just going to give you...
Okay.
Okay, but I'm just going to give you my perspective now. So you've given yours. Let me give mine. I can promise you one thing. The state of California is not giving you a dime if what you said is true. I promise you. Period. They would not have given this community any money. And they have massive amount of resources. They have Department of Water Resources. They have conservation folks there. They have the Governor's Office of Finance. Governor's Office of Research, and believe me, they do not want to give anyone any money if they could disprove that the premise is untrue. I promise you. So I'm just giving you another perspective. That's all. Okay.
John, did you want to continue asking questions? I didn't realize you were going to do that. That's why I walked away. So, Dina, I think there's one more person that has a question.
So I just want, just not my opinion that they gave you money. I'm telling you, this is not an easy vet for the state of California.
Yeah.
Yes. The question is, was there a current application from the iBank? And I will tell you that, yes, we are putting the documents together to allow iBank to make a cogent decision on whether or not we can be in this lower interest rate environment.
What are the qualifications?
Now, let me qualify that and say that if we had gone to iBank 3 years ago, refis were easy. Now everybody's discovered iBank, and iBank would like to see not just refis, but what else in the community are you attempting to do of value? Let's use wastewater or other things that this community needs. And is that financeable at a lower rate so we can combine both so that you get more done at a lower rate that hopefully is still lower than the amount? And I know the board's struggling with, we can do more, but if it ends up the same, what the heck, why? So I think picking the right projects, follow me for a moment, and combining that with a drop from 5%, 4% to 1%, if you can get all of the other projects done at, let's say, 2, and that incremental 2% that you have paid for, you know, all the stuff, that's what iBank's struggling with. I think that's what the board is debating, talking about, trying to figure out. I think it's a good debate. It's a healthy debate. Things are breaking. Things get old. You have to do however you feel about the emergency facility or sustainable facility. There are still things in this district that need to be fixed. And iBank is offering the opportunity to fix those. The question is, how much are you fixing, and how can we combine it to do a refi so that somebody doesn't come point to this community and say, how did they get a refi and we didn't, because you've been telling everybody else no. I will tell you that the director of the bank right now has been awesome. She's been available. She's been super flexible. So I really feel very good about the process there. And we just have to kind of finish. The board has to continue that debate on what they feel is the right mix. You can do everything, but if it isn't the right mix to lower the rates, hopefully, or going into your rate structure discussions isn't something to be counted in, that's the issue. No. The question was, how are we progressing with iBank at this point, and do we qualify? Oh, am I getting commission? No. No, I'm not getting commission. I'm very fortunate, though, to have good relationships with Avena and the governor's office. I think they know that, I'm going to be very frank, I think the governor's office know that they pushed very quickly on this and that they gave the board very little than to get a conventional loan. I mean, they pushed so hard, they could have stepped up and done this thing with iBank, but I don't think Avena was there yet, and I don't think they were as creative as they are today. They were learning on the learning curve as well. But I think they feel that our pain, they know that unconventional was in some sense pushed by the Office of Research, and that the board at that time had to, took that conventional financing.
Dean, we have one more question for Mr. Lyons, and I'd like to ask a question, maybe redirect how things have been.
Yeah.
Lest you think that everything in this community is contentious, one thing that I can assure you is that nearly everyone who lives here is very interested and focused on infrastructure, to the extent that most of us know what the job is ahead of us, and most of us are anxious to get on with it. Mm-hmm. The problem has been financing. So what you just said about the iBank intrigues me. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could tuck the needs for infrastructure, that is financing, into this lower interest rate? How fast would we have to get the infrastructure programs to you or who's ever applying for the iBank loan adjustment to have that included?
Anytime. In fairness, it is. I'm going to put my municipal finance hat on for a moment. It is not an easy thing for a board to cipher through past needs, current needs, and future needs, and then overlay that with capital facility improvements and repairs. It is not an easy task. It is time-consuming. I know you're going to hate this, but you would normally hire a consultant to do that. But nonetheless, it is very, very a tough thing. So I can understand the board struggling with that. The positive of that is exactly what iBank asked us to do. So it is not in vain that you're going through that analysis with some end that ends in a dead end. I think the iBank is simply saying, tell us, given what you think your ratepayers and others want to absorb And the choice, quite frankly, for the board is very simple. Do we do the minimal amounts of improvements and capital improvements for the future and try to hope that through rates increases, as those come due, we pay for those? Nobody likes rate increases. Or do we finance that now, lowering our really high coupon, add those projects now, and no rate increase, if that's possible? It's a very hard balance, but there's a sweet spot there. How much projects do we get done with no rate increase? And we got those projects done, and there was no future rate increases. Or do we just go for the refi? And right now we've been told no refis. So there were really three choices. And then that middle ground is the hard thing. It's a community discussion. It's how you feel about wastewater. It's how you feel about projects that you see here that aren't going to get done because, quite frankly, there isn't enough money. Or if there is enough money, there's going to have to be a rate increase for that. You know, it's all of that debate is really about a capital facility outlay program. The hard part about this is that the IBANC is, well, I'll be really honest. How long does Governor Brown have left in office? And the things change. Administrations change. The IBANC director may not be there. The five members of the IBANC, let me name them. Michael Cohen, finance director, appointed by the governor. John Chung. No, not that Michael Cohen. Sorry. And his office wasn't raided, I promise. But I'm going to go through these just so you can understand the timing of it. So you've got John Chung, our treasurer. He's also a member of the IBANC. So you've got elected officers who are changing, controllers on the IBANC. It's a very small group, five people. The IBANC makes very quick decisions. It's pretty easy for them. But they're all going to change in November. So I would say if there's an out date, I would certainly try to come to some conclusions, unless somebody has a magic ball in town, who the next governor is going to be and who they're going to appoint and who they're going to be. I think there's some magical point about trying to figure out staying with the same partners. And once you lock in with IBANC, at least you're locked in. So they know what they're going to finance, and they move pretty quickly. Yeah.
I could just make a comment. Dean, you kind of read my mind, so did Mr. Lyons. With regard to the election in November, mm-hmm. Hopefully there'll be some changes both in the legislature and in people that are appointed that might kind of redirect, let's say, finances and otherwise, that might make the concerns of smaller communities like ours more, of more concern to people in Sacramento. That's one thing I would hope for. And another thing I'd like to comment on is what Mike said. We've spent a lot of time talking here about the sustainable water facility, emergency water facility, advanced water treatment plant. But it's the concerns of infrastructure, especially the sewer plant and water storage and delivery, is where we need to have as much financing, shovel-ready projects, which we've kind of been a little bit remiss in. This is probably where we could really need financial assistance as much as the facility itself.
Yeah, and just to tag on Harry's point, this is really where the board and your GM are, I think, beginning to figure out what those projects are. The hard part is sure, your board could add up every project here, every one of them, and come up with a super high number, and then we could refinance the 5%, 4% coupon and add those extra projects, and you could be just where you were payment. I don't know if that's good or bad. That's a decision for the community. If we're already paying what we're paying now, but now we're getting all this other stuff and we're not going to have a rate increase for a great long time, then that's a community conversation and a board conversation. I think what the board is trying to do is, what do we really need to do, truly? And then what can we then refinance, and how do we portend issues of savings, right? And there's a lot of things you can do with savings. It doesn't mean it goes back to the ratepayer. Everybody, ratepayers love stuff back. We can go to sinking fund, and the sinking fund can be an ongoing reserve for those items. So then when you want to buy a library or you want to buy a new facility, the banks go, wow, yes, you're financeable. Awesome. Great. It's the reason Jerry Brown has a huge reserve. It's the reason why we have AAA ratings. Governor says, yeah, you guys want to spend it all, but we're not. We're going to put this into a sinking fund. and it allows for the reserve for the district, and it means that when you do other financings, your rates don't go up either, as much at least, because you have a good, strong reserve. This is the struggle, I think, that the board is going through. And rightfully, it's a good debate. It's a good debate to have. It's a good thing to discuss, especially when you have a bank saying, let me know. So, yes.
Okay, Dean, thanks for taking another question from me. Tina Dickerson, by the way. So with all of that you've been discussing with an iBank application, first I would ask, when was the application made to iBank? That's my first question. Just give me a date. Secondly, when does the town get to find out or discuss what the priorities are in infrastructure needs? A new wastewater treatment plant is going to be between $100 and $150 million.
So you've answered your question. We have not done that because I think they're waiting to have that conversation with the
community. But when was the application made? That was my first question.
As in with any bank, there's no a formal application with the iBank.
There is no formal application.
No.
I see. So when did you talk to them then?
We've talked to them two or three times.
Okay, and you said the iBank is composed of five people and they make very quick decisions.
They do.
How quick are those decisions made?
I think they meet once every 3 weeks.
Every 3 weeks, and they're up for re-election or they're resigning or whatever in November.
Well, they'll be gone in January 1st.
Okay. Is there any chance that this district could get actually some big dollars when our Prop 84 funding has been through an 8-month audit?
Yeah.
We don't know how that's going to turn out.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know. So how can we go and ask for millions and millions more when we don't even know where we're at with the $4.3 million that we got, or at least the county doesn't know.
Well, I don't want to confuse the two. So one is a grant.
Right.
And the iBank is looking at ongoing revenue streams that can be safely, they can feel good about it. You have that. You're a district and you take in the dollars. That's not the issue. The issue for the iBank is what would be the preference for the board in terms of debt service, and how much is that debt service, and is ultimately workable for the ratepayers? That's what the iBank cares about.
Well, I saw a figure of $8 million to be added to the already existing loan. Mm-hmm. I saw that in an agenda packet. So I don't even know what that's going to pay for. I think that's what a lot of people would like to know.
But I think that's why the board, we've had two calls. I think Jerry's been on some of those calls. Man has been on those calls. We literally, I'm just going to give you my take, and that is when the iBank says, we think you're financeable, and we understand the predicament we put you in, frankly, because we asked you to do this, because you were close to running out of water. But the point is, from iBank's perspective, you talk to your community, you, the board, discuss your priorities. We're here. We get it. We're ready. You tell us. That's kind of where we're at. So I would say that the reason we haven't formally signed up, there really isn't a formal with the iBank. It's really more of a submission, I think, after the board and the community have this discussion on all of the items that you've had. And I think I can tell you that I think the board has been struggling with the right mix. And I think that's the right kind of debate to have. You would have been really mad if you had said we have an application and you never were told, believe me. So I would say in some sense it's bad that you don't have one in because you actually don't need a formal one, but at the same time it says that I think your board is waiting to have these conversations and bubbling up. Thank you. I'll see you in the next couple quarters. I'll keep coming back. I think it's helpful. Yeah. Yeah.
Question for you.
Sure.
My name's Jeff Hellman. Have you guys considered as an alternative a big bond issue for this community? Can it get one? I long thought that it would be really wise for this community to do exactly what you're doing with iBank. I didn't know about iBank. In other words, get the money for everything we need to do, put it under one big massive umbrella, and get as low a rate as possible. Mm-hmm. Municipal bonds are still, I guess, tax deductible on a state level. So what have you done to explore?
That's exactly what we're doing with iBank. I mean, and in some sense, iBank is it is on municipal finance rate. It is backed by the full credit of the state. The reason iBank gets such great rates is that they put its letter of credit behind it. So iBank, I think, itself is a very unique and very useful place. So it is. It's exactly what you said.
It's like a hybrid, isn't it?
It's a hybrid, but preface it. It's a hybrid, but it's still the district that is ultimately on the hook. Okay, like any bank, you know, it's still the district. So the financing has to match the revenue. The revenue has to be reflective of the project. The project has to be reflective of what the community wants. And it's a balance of what further needs you're going to do. I mean, you can take every project here, throw it into and call it an improvement or repair or future connection, whatever you may want to say. iBank will look at that, but I don't think it's, you know, you'll end up, all that savings and the hope for the refi would have been not worth it because you end up paying more, I mean, even though you got more projects, you know what I mean? So I think it's trying to figure out the right projects. I think there's somebody behind you. Yes. No, right. And either or, yeah.
Christine Heinrichs from Cambria here. Uh-huh. Yeah, to go back a little bit about sustainable, thank you for that definition of what you're talking about, because that, again, is a whole new definition from what we've talked about in Cambria. So that's kind of a surprise to get that. Perhaps we could have known that earlier. The other thing is when we talk about the emergency water project and the sustainable water projects, when they got to sustainable water project, there's substantial differences from what's going on out there now. Mm-hmm. There's a whole new water project that has to be built there that has to do with the brine wastewater pond that was built by mistake that cost $1.7 million. These are questions that I think a bank might well ask about the use of that money. I've also not heard of this bank before, and this I heard one thing go around about it, and all of a sudden you're saying, and get, you know, straighten me out on this, but it sounds like, well, we're not actually going to apply for anything, but we're going to get this money, and then we're going to wrap things up. I mean, this does not sound like a good idea to me.
Well, I'm not going to take your characterization because that's not what I said at
all.
Well,
could you
let me be really clear then, because I don't think I said that. First, there is no application to the iBank because I just said I believe a few times that the community and the board have to first figure out what's financeable. So it's exactly where it should be right now. It should be with you. It should be discussed at the board. It should be figured out. It should figure out what is the right mix. Once you, I'm going to go sequentially through this. So once you do that and you figure out that mix, then we will reengage with the iBank and we will say, this is what the community and the board will vote, what they would like to seek a loan with the iBank for. And clearly, the core of that will be the refi. That's the reason we're there. If not, we'd just be adding more debt, and that would be not a good thing. So after that process, the iBank will consider it, and they will take every factor that you've just mentioned. Believe me, they'll take every factor into account. And then they will make a decision, and my guess is that the decision, and it's a very formed guess, would be we should do this. And if they do that, then the community will know exactly what that debt structure and that repayment will look like because it would have, I believe, been discussed pretty strenuously at the board, and there would have been a vote, and then it's probably going to be another vote to even accept what the iBank is offering. So I think there's going to be about two or three votes still from that occurring. And that's the process. It's not, you know, cross our fingers and let's hope. I mean, there's a lot of hard work that needs to take place.
Okay, then that confusion, since you've been using a different definition of sustainable from what we've been using as sustainable, feeds into the confusion about growth.
Yeah.
Since as Mel and John made the point, we've never gotten any water from the project.
Yeah.
We never needed any water from the project. So if we don't need water from it, but we're paying $9 million for it, what else could it be for except for growth?
Yeah, but I don't think your local regulations, both county and this area, will ever allow for anything than what's in your plan.
Well, it's going on now, so.
Well, I think we should be at the county then, and arguing that. But I don't think it has anything to do with the water facility. I just don't see that enabling. I don't see it enabling any more growth than what the county or the local ordinances allow. That's just my view of it. Yes.
Can I just inform you on a direct quote from one of our supervisors who was told to me at a formal meeting, the board of supervisors of this county are not legally liable to honor the master plan for growth of this county. They can supersede it anytime they want.
Uh-huh.
They don't have to go to the public for permission to do it. So when you quote growth numbers here, mm-hmm. and you say that there's a restriction on it, that's simply not the case.
Well, legally it's the case, and I think you've mentioned that they could supersede that, and that's way beyond my pay grade in terms of what they can do or not do. I mean, sounds like you should run an initiative in your county. But anyway.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I'm Karen Dean. I live here in Cambria. Okay. Back to iBank.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't normally do refis anymore.
Correct.
They will refi if we have other projects
Correct.
Added in. The other projects that are added in order to do this refi, does the cost of those projects have to be at least as much as the refi? Is there any kind of a ratio between what those projects have to total in order to refi?
I think you were on our last call with the bank, right? That, I think, is the question that your president asked pretty succinctly to the bank. And I think, if I correct me, and I know Jerry and a few others were on the line, the answer to that was we'd like to get as close as possible to half of what you've just mentioned. That's the struggle, is what are the project get you to that? And the reason the bank said that is that they are not prime lenders, right? They're not going to say you're going to go over a certain ratio and you're going to get in trouble and we're going to get in trouble and everyone's going to be really mad. I think the bank's being very conservative with that. The question for the board, the GM, and others is what are those half of that amount projects that actually are financeable? And I still have an issue with then give us a lower, even lower rate then, because we're still trying to find savings even after that. So what's the good of doing this if we're going to stay at the same rate, right? Even though we're getting more projects, that's wonderful, but the real kicker, the real win is to get both. And that's where we have to be hard negotiators, I think, with the bank. They have given, 0% to certain communities. They've done certain things. Those are disadvantaged communities, to be fair. They're in the disadvantaged community realm. But nonetheless, one would say that we should be looking for that. Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. Okay. Yes.
Mr. Flores, sure. Thank you. My name is Dwayne Lee. I would like to state to the citizens, my fellow citizens here in Cambria, the board has made giant strides just recently in setting up two standing committees for this community, one in the area of finance and one in the area of infrastructure. We have just, I'm on the finance committee, and we have just started our setup procedures in our organizational meetings. We've both committees have just had the first one. When we have committee meetings in the future, I want to invite every one of you to come. These are open meetings. We value input from the community. This is where you can give us your ideas on what you feel as to what's being presented. You can also tell us what you like, what you don't like, in whatever direction. This is totally open. This is something that I think is great. It's a huge stride for this community, because you're going to be able to know just exactly what we're talking about here, what the staff is proposing, what the board, what we are going to be discussing, and then bring to the board and say, okay, this is our recommendation. Now, then it's up to the board to decide what they want to do. But that's the reason for these, and these are standing open committees. Right. So, folks, we've had very little participation. We've just gotten started. We're just setting up. So that's fine. The problems we're going to be discussing are still coming. So you haven't missed anything. Yeah. So you're welcome. Watch for they put these out. They're publicized when they're going to be. And please, watch out for these. And when they do, we're mostly going to be meeting at the fire station. Come and fill that place up. We want to hear from you. Yeah. We need your input. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, I second that. But I would like to make a point to Senator Flores that I hope I'm right in that if we manage to lower the interest rate from approximately 5 to 1 or 2, that's a huge savings. Mm-hmm. But don't forget, we have delayed way beyond what we should have done any investment in infrastructure. And I, for one, would like to say that I'm not totally opposed to, if we can get financing for 1 or 2% for infrastructure, let's get started on it. I don't care to pay high interest rates, but I don't mind paying for something.
Yeah.
So that something is infrastructure, and I would disabuse you of the notion that the community wouldn't stand for at least a parity. We're pretty close to, with a new rate increase probably coming for wastewater, we're not too far from getting back to a fairly healthy financial situation. And once we get that far, I don't think the community would be totally against a fairly high investment in needed infrastructure.
Well, I'm not stepping into that one. There's a finance committee meeting, and people should debate what the right... I think the key to it is to have the community feel comfortable in whatever the balance of that is, and there will be a balance. And the question was great about, you know, what is the iBank looking at in terms of what will kick that in. So at least you know there's some a ceiling. Hopefully people will figure that out, and then they certainly know the ground floor of that. So,
Dean, there's still two people out here that wish to ask questions.
Yeah.
So after these two, maybe we can redirect you back into your presentation. Yeah.
I one thing I did learn in business school is that you never put up more than 6 slides. So this is not, you know, this is just more of a guidance. But I think this is a very good way to have the back and forth, which I think is better and helps my thinking as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Harry and Mr. Flores. Laura Swartz, Cambrian, and I wanted to thank Dwayne for the invitation to the Finance Committee. We've been looking forward to that because as I'm listening to this, it seems to me, in my opinion, we've made some real questionable high-dollar loans that were not very well done with the loan because I was there when it happened. And refinancing is great, but it seems to me that we have to spend more money to save money, and we already have a spending problem. So I think the community really has to watch what we spend more on to save.
Yes.
Because that's where everybody gets in problems. We have to spend more to save. Yeah. And that concept, we need to go to the Finance Committee and really watch what we're spending on this time. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Don Howell. Just a quickie question. We've talked about the iBank.
Sure.
Have you made any overtures to the actual holder of the loan? Has there been any discussions about how willing they are to go through with this and what they're going to charge?
Yeah. Good question. And I think somebody mentioned it earlier. I think you did. Can I get your name again?
John.
So John mentioned the penalty, right? It was the penalty. Somebody mentioned the penalty. Yeah, penalty, how big is that, and is it worth it? That's a real issue, only in the sense that there is a penalty, not a good loan. But I would say when you have no other financing, you know, that's, yeah. you know, that's Okay. So the goal of this pre-penalty is to pull, you can get out of it. Yeah. So there is a covenant. Right. Covenant does allow you to get out of it. There is a substantial penalty for it, correct? And the value of taking it over a longer period of time is not a good idea. So what we want to do with iBank is we want to have kind of a bullet so we can pay that penalty. So we're not paying interest on the penalty for right. 20 years. We want to be able to bullet that. And I have talked to iBank about that. They have done that in a few other communities. So this is the only community that got rushed into a loan. Trust me, there's lots of places that have done this. And so we're going to be looking to pay that bullet off. It will not be cheap, but the bank will not, the bank doesn't have the ability to say no.
Well, part of the question that I had, there's additional verbiage in the contract I didn't fully understand, but yeah. It appears to be an installment sale, so that the district does not have title to the facility. So there has to be some willingness on the part of the current owner
yeah.
to transfer title. And there is language in there that the district does anything to create tax consequences for the lender as a result of this, that then the district has some penalties to go through. And I just want to know if you actually had discussions with the bankers.
Yeah. Okay. I've not talked to you, yeah, but I would say that just on this last point, the tax consequences can be mitigated, and in some sense, the bank could be a participant in this and can take their tax liability out. Because we're with the state, because we're in that kind of non-exempt place. So there is a solution for the bank on that. There's not a solution for the penalty. That's the I don't know what the exact number is. 100, yeah. Well, okay, so I'll give you my view of it. In totality, one payment, you know, maybe let's use on $200,000 and under. If you extend that and try to finance your way out of it, could be $400,000. You don't want to try to finance it out. You want to bullet it out and be done with it. And you know, banks are banks. I mean, it's what they do. You know, they lock you in, and it's hard to do. The state has done a lot of these. They've done a lot of these installment refis way early in disadvantaged communities. I've seen whole airports, you know, built in this kind of thing. So this is not like unique, but I do think the way the board approaches it, the way the finance committee should discuss it is how do you get out of that penalty with the least amount of pain? The easy thing is, it sounds like you just throw it into the financing, no big deal. But then if you finance that over 20, 30 years, you know. I think how many more years we have on that? 18, right?
It'll yeah. be it's through August of 2034.
34, yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
Could we, Dean, could we have you get back to your regular programming?
Any more on this topic?
Yeah.
Of course. There's no red buttons tonight, I promise, so you can talk as long as you want.
Thank you for that. By the way, I wanted to thank Director Farmer for putting this together.
Thank you, Harry.
I think
that was good.
Yeah. I meant to do that initially.
Yeah.
The question I have is on the extra funding besides the funding for the original loan
sure.
that would be refinanced if possible. What exactly is are the monies that would be added to that to be used for? Are they specific? Are they specified as to whether how they can be added to get this loan? Are they to be added to the project, or are they to be new projects? Because I haven't heard anything about that, but I have a big question in my head about it.
Yeah, I don't want to get you to your big question. So let me just say that I think the Finance Committee, your question is better brought to the committee that will be gathering and looking at all things that are financeable.
But you're working with iBank.
Oh, well, yeah, I am working with iBank.
They're not.
Well, no, correct.
Right?
No, that's not true. We all are working with iBank. I'm the connection to iBank, but I think the board has set up a structure where they have to figure out. iBank has given us a task,
uh-huh.
and that is, okay, what do you want to finance?
But are they giving you specifics as to how you can add an additional however many million to the refinancing? And are they making it dollar specific as to what you can use that those funds
no,
for?
No, they're not giving us any pre-prescribed.
Okay.
You can't use it for this, but I just...
There's a but.
So I, yes, there's a but, because I don't want to see you next meeting. And okay. I told you something different. The but is the bank still has the ability, let's say that the board and the GM and others come up with a plan, and this has been the struggle I think Jerry's rightfully had, right? We could do a lot of different projects. The right management decision is, I'd like to know what they would say yes or no to before we waste a lot of time doing this.
There you go.
The bank's saying, we'd like you to propose something to us so we can tell you yes or no on the our projects.
Okay, so staff needs to get on it? And the
No, I'm just saying it was in this void, right? So, you know, if you're talking to a GM with limited staff, he's going to say, I could sit here all day long and create a spreadsheet that would wow the bank. Dean, is there any way you can tell me what they're going to finance or not? And I can tell Jerry, no, I don't know. But put your list together once the committee meets and figures it out. And then the bank is saying, you know, we'll tell you what we think are good or not. I will tell you that the bank will not unplug things that are connected that make sense together. If there's some loose items out there that don't somehow work, they're looking for some synergies between some of the projects. So I do think the bank has told me that. So there's just some work to do at the community level
now. Well, you are the liaison, and we are paying you pretty good money.
You are.
And so I would ask that we get some specifics, more specifics than we... Because believe me, before I came here tonight, the only thing I saw was the $8 million in addition to the existing loan.
Sure. Yeah, got it.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Harry, can I go on? Okay. One more question? Yeah. Yeah, of course. You know what? Just to let you know how the presentation is going, we're all going to come back to the same topic anyway. So you're basically cutting two slides out of my presentation. So it's just you're saving yourself time. So this is actually really good. Yeah.
John Toth, Cambrian. So we all know that there's no reward for saving. Although as Cambrians, we will continue to save because we know what the consequences are and the limits to our water supply. The rest of the state doesn't seem to share that and understand that. Inasmuch as, and this has been very educational for me to understand the funding and financing of ways to keep our emergency water supply endurable or bearable as opposed to using sustainable. and sometimes maybe it's unbearable, but I guess my point is, all of these things are things that you're focusing on that are ending up costing us money.
Yeah.
Are there any things that you're doing that are out of the box that not necessarily going to cost us money? And I would point at Jerry Brown's Delta water pipe that is probably going to disintegrate before he gets out of office, and therefore there's some $6 billion there that might be tapped to help relieve our conditions.
Yeah. So
is there anything in that realm?
Yeah. So I think the gist of the question is, beyond the financing, what other dollars are you working on to bring that you're not paying for? So in other words, grant dollars, bond dollars, federal dollars, all those things that you see all those communities getting. And the question is, how do we get those dollars as well brought into this? Which leads me right into my next slide, which is perfect.
Which is great. Yes. Okay.
I'm going to skip around a little bit, but I want to just talk a little bit about the legislature and then go to the regulatory agencies. So, you know, I've been to a couple board meetings ago. So you're in Sacramento, and what do you do? Why are you talking to all of these people? And what do they have to do with Cambria? And I just want to kind of put it in context on who, you know, when you look at the legislature, and it's really a small subset of people that you really need to talk to that actually have some bearing on your world here. And they fall in like three categories. There's regulatory legislation, things that tell you that you were doing something and now you have to do it differently that costs the district money or actually improves the district in some way. There is grants, funds, and bonds. And this is a year where you're seeing a lot of bond legislation. And I did hand the bills that I am focusing on for your district, and I want to preface this when you walked in, I want to preface this by saying these are the bills out of the 3,000 bills that are 3,100 bills for this session. These are the subset of 23 to 26 bills that really, in my mind, have some effect on your district. And so what I've tried to do is summarize these bills, and I want you to know that I track them. And you must wonder, I must sit around and track these things and go to every committee. Well, what I do is, you know, obviously with technology, I'm not too good with the PowerPoint, but it allows me to see how bills are amended, what bills are going, and more importantly, get me into conversations with chairs. When I'm talking to chairs, for example, Eduardo Garcia, who chairs the Water Committee, I'm saying to him, how's the water bond going? When do you think it will be on the ballot? Do you have your two-thirds? And have you talked to Jordan Cunningham? And he says, why do I want to talk to Jordan Cunningham? And I said, because we live in an area that is often ignored. It is of regional insignificance in the legislature. And by the way, I work for Cambria. And he normally blinks twice and says, wow, okay. And I say to him, we really would like to have some funds put into this water bond, or at least have the ability to compete. And when I say funds, I normally say the words wastewater, recycle, or improvement funds. If I'm talking to another member about the fire dollars that they're putting together, I normally talk about what we need to do here in the district to participate in, like, timber and all the other things. And so when I list these members behind me, they normally have some semblance of some impact on these 26 bills that could either be very favorable and helpful or can be very negative. The bills that I've given you are a subset of what I'm following. I would ask a public request. So you have these great committees. So I would ask, this is off the fly, and Jerry's going, gosh, what's Dean going to say? But it would be great if the board would create a legislative committee, and I think once in a while get together and say, these are bills, if Dean is doing this, and he does work for the district, this is the things that we'd like him to really focus on. And beyond, okay, so I think the key to it is to, this is my list of things that affect you. I didn't do this in a vacuum. I talked to Aqua, I talked to special districts, I talked to a whole host of people who have big, big lobbyists in Sacramento, and I asked the question, what bill would affect Cambria? And they said, okay, well, you are looking at this, and you are looking at that, and you are looking at this, and this would affect. So sometimes you have to cipher out that, because they're not lobbying you to be their lobbyist. So, you know, a lot of it is trying to figure out the things that really matter. So what I've done is I've listened at board meetings, I listen in some sense to what's going on in Sacramento, and I try to make sure that we have funding opportunities in bonds. And so there are 7 bond bills this year. Some of them are climate change bills, but they all kind of relate back to water, sustainability, and a lot of them are just straight out bonds. So on your list, you'll see a lot of bills that have to do with the funding aspect of it. Oops, I didn't change my slides. So some are bonds and grants. That's in one category. The other is what I called recycled. Recycled purple pipe water is like the newest thing and the best thing and the most funded thing. And it used to be, it's like the thing that every legislator wants to fund and do. So, you know, I really follow those bills just to kind of figure out at some point where this all ends up for the district. And then there's water management. There are lots of bills this year to tell you what to do. Trust me. They're all listed here, but I can give you a few of them. Probably the most important bill has to do with the way that your front office and what happens at Jerry's office and Monique's office and folks at work, all these other reporting things that you will be thrown on you. Websites, reports, things that go to the state. I mean, things that Metropolitan Water could do like in a heartbeat with like half a FTE. Things that Jerry would look at and say, if I had to do all these things, I'd have to hire 4 people. So in the category, there are things that affect the ongoing look at how you manage. And then there's fire and Cal OES, which I know I've been doing a little more of the bills in here, all have to do with kind of how fire departments operate. There's a lot of bills this year making fire departments, or at least the kind of fire departments we have here, do things extra. And so I'm monitoring those. And these are all going to, hopefully, the board will kind of take, these are, you know, don't focus on this, focus on that. There's tax assessments, and then there's budget trailer bills. So the only thing you should be really worried about in this whole list is these things called budget trailer bills. Those are the things that happen in the dead of night, and they're normally the things that really affect most of what you do. I want to mention two bills right now, just out of this list, that best represent what kind of impact this would have. So let me start with Senator Monning's bill, and he's your representative. It's a disastrous bill, so, and I like Bill Monning a lot, but it's a bill that would tax a bottle of water 95 cents in order to pay for districts that are in the disadvantaged category and allow them to clean up their water systems. Very noble, great bill, get the purpose, but every district like yourself will have to put literally a dollar on your bill to pay for, let's say, 3,000 really bad water systems in California. And I'm a little torn on this because I'm very close to environmental justice communities. I get what's going on in tainted water systems like Delano or McFarland or Arvin. Those are all my old Senate district. But this bill is kind of aimed at getting districts like yourselves and larger districts to pay a surcharge that goes to the state, and the state then cleans up those water systems. That's a really bad precedent. It means that once a state does this, it'll do it again and again and again, and I know because I've done it, and I've been part of the state. And it's like one of those things that people have to debate here. I know that Jerry's aware of it. We've talked about this water tax bill. You know, people, Aqua's against it. Most of the EJ groups are for it. Farmers, believe it or not, half of them are for it, half of them are against it. Ag councils for it. They're going to tax themselves a fertilizer tax in order to pay to clean up aquifers that are gone. That's not a bad thing, but they also get some regulatory relief. But they don't have residents, and you know, water districts don't have, I mean, they're large base taxpayers, you know, or agricultural institutions. So that is a more pressing bill, and that bill didn't go anywhere for a little bit, and then it just kind of disappeared, and it just reappeared this week in a trailer bill. Nobody knows the number, nobody knows where it's going, but it's kind of like floating out there. So, you know, there are bills like that where, you know, you can make a significant difference. It will have an impact on the district. I mean, what good is it to do all the financing and we lower rates and then Jerry comes back next year or the board and says, yeah, we got this new water tax for 30 years. It's, you know, a dollar on your bill every month. And so it's definitely something to keep your eye on. The Monning bill is no longer a bill, but it's a trailer bill. And I, believe me, I was on the way here trying to get a number for the trailer bill for you. There is no number on it yet. So once I do, I will get it to you. The other bill is a bill that just surfaced in April. And as you know, remember, the governor got rid of all redevelopment agencies. You know, it kind of just vaporized them. Well, the governor's leaving, so the legislature wants to bring back RDAs. And the problem with the way that they're bringing it back is that RDAs that can extend all the way out to this point where we're sitting here today will take a significant amount of your dollars. And quite a bit. And if you were to, I think I had asked Jerry, oh, thank you, Jerry. I think I had asked staff, and I know they're doing the analysis, say, what was our district like in RDA days, and what would it be like, what was it after RDA days, and what would it be like with RDA days again? So that kind of analysis is really important. I think it will determine whether or not you support that effort or don't support that effort. But my guess is it's not going to be a bunch of a positive for this area. And in fact, it'll be a grab, and a significant grab. And so there's a coalition of folks, and I was contacted, and everyone gave me the bad news for Cambria and said, you need to be on our team, and we need to kill this thing. It's going to kill Cambria. But I don't know that. I mean, staff has to do the analysis. the board has to direct and say this is something we should be a part of. The board has to say this is something that we oppose. I mean, these are things that the board needs to vote on. And that's why you need a subcommittee. That's why you need to look at some of these bills. Those are all things that are external from you but can have a significant impact on your everyday rates. And then you're going to feel, you know, at least, you know, good or bad about it. But I think the point is the more folks that are involved in this actually can be part of a larger coalition. Yes? And there's also an ACA. There's a resolution that also, so the issue, just so you know, on the RDA issue, I doubt if the governor's going to sign that before he leaves. But there's a lot of pressure right now for folks to kind of hint to the next governor coming that this would be something that to bring back. Both gubernatorial candidates, both Gavin Newsom and Antonio Villaraigosa, or even the Republican candidate, all have different views on RDAs. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of comes about. So that's legislation. Can I talk about the regulatory stuff? Okay, because this is kind of the everyday stuff. I think iBank's behind me, right? Somewhere I added them. So we just kind of focused on iBank for a little bit. But we haven't talked much about Coastal Commission. And, you know, the Coastal Commission has gone through significant changes. It's gone through trials and tribulations, and it has ended up with a new executive director. And the Coastal Commission, as you know, and I'm just going to bring things to light because it's gotten quiet, so maybe the debate will heat up a little bit. But as you know, the Coastal Commission was not too happy with the way that the emergency water system happened here. The Coastal Commission was kind of left in the dark. Coastal Commission is not used to that. You know, it just happened so fast. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. This is Cambria, and nobody told us. So I would say that when the Coastal Commission is looking at the project and has continued to look at the project, I think the key for them is to understand what this community is, how this community is looking at this sustainable emergency, however they're looking at it, and have some of the past issues been mitigated. And it's been really awesome to have the Coastal Commission here in town, which is rare. Twice, you know, and so I think when I first started, it was a very different, you know, I think Jerry and I are the only ones left, I think, right, Amanda? No? Yeah. Who was on the, is it? Well, Jim. Oh, yeah, you were there too, right. So Jim and Amanda will remember that when we first started, when we first talked to the Coastal Commission, I remember, I think my first day, and I introduced myself to a Coastal Commissioner who I know, and I said, hey, I just want to let you know I'm going to come talk to you about Cambria. And the first thing they said to me is, that's the place with dead horses. And I remember it going, you know, to me it's like, wow, dead horses, what is that about? And it was very interesting because it tells you, and I use this story as a metaphor, but to a reality that also transcends politics. People and decision makers, in some sense, know very little about communities, but when they learn a little bit and they're stuck on something, they need to know the whole story. And so it took a lot of time to tell the entire story. And that doesn't mean good or bad. I mean, there's no argument about some of these things. But the other was that it was beginning to turn around, that we're beginning to have more community involvement. Jerry, countless meetings with me in Sacramento, which I think have been very helpful at state parks and other places that had a very different flavor of, and I would just say that it seems to me just looking at the current Coastal Commission, that is a pretty balanced view now. I mean, they know we have our issues here. They know we still need to work on our issues here, but you certainly aren't starting from the point where it started. And I think that's much of a positive, because I will tell you that one of the things that staff has done here very well since that time, and Jerry particularly, is that they have embraced the Coastal Commission's criticisms and addressed them. And the Coastal Commission loves that, because most people don't do that. They literally hire high-power lobbyists, and they power their way through at the final board meeting, and they normally don't get their results. So I feel bad for a lot of those folks that think that's the way you do it. The way you do it with the Coastal Commission is you work with them, as painful as it is, and they can nitpick you to the finest period and comma, but if you embrace that, I think it ends up a better process for the community, because I think the plan becomes better. They like it, and I would say, in, you know, I won't ask Jerry to say anything, or Amanda, or others, but it seems as though the relationship with the Coastal Commission is 100% better, 100% better, and they feel good that we're working with them, and I think it's good that we've embraced some of their criticisms, and at the same time, we've addressed a lot of their misconceptions, which I think is a good thing as well. So I just, you know, want to kind of give you, on the regulatory side, you know, it's difficult. I've been to meetings in Sacramento where the first thing I've walked in, various agencies, and they say, I mean, they've gotten calls from the community, and they say, oh, we heard this. And I go, okay, and then we haven't even said a word yet, and you kind of start with something that isn't too positive. And I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I'm saying it's more challenging to try to bring a balance to the conversation when you start from that point. And I have seen in Sacramento with our regulatory agencies, I'm going to point behind me and say State Parks, Water Resources, Coastal Commission, you know, the folks that really matter to this district, they I think now have a much more balanced view of the community. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the past criticisms have been disregarded. I think they're just now trying to balance all views a little better. So that's just how I kind of view this. Yes.
Thank you. On this issue, I mean, I've really stayed very close,
yes,
with the Coastal Commission, as you may well know.
Yes, I do.
And let me just say this, that in July of 2014, the ISMND, if you've read that, Dean, made it very clear how the Coastal Commission felt. Not only the Coastal Commission, all of the regulatory agencies that would be involved with this project in July. They were ignored, but a follow-up meeting was held in August of 2014 up in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm, with Coastal Commission staff. Mm-hmm. Again, trying to get to the bottom of these things before they just got to where they did. And so it is only just fairly recently that Tom Luster has been included in the meetings that occur with county and with district staff. So I would say that, you know, they've been pretty much ignored, and that's the last agency you want to ignore, as you've pretty much stated. And so their biggest concern, maybe you said it was a dead horse or whatever, the biggest concern, as you may well know, and I know staff knows, is the fact that this project is in Esha. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest problem, yeah, and that's the stumbling block, the biggest stumbling block that I think the district is faced with. Mm-hmm. And I wish very much that the district had gone with a project that I proposed and I did a lot of work on, and that was off-stream storage reservoir on Clyde Warren's property. He was willing to sell, mm-hmm, 600 to 700 acre feet of capacity, and seepage and evaporation of 5%, which Gus Yates did. I think we all know who Gus Yates is. So there was an opportunity, but the district, the workshop was very successful. I still have all of the information, the boards, the graphs, everything. And my hope is that one day Cambria will have a reservoir and off-stream storage, because they can do winter pumping that will not go against their diversion permit allowance. So there's a lot to be said for that. And I hope we see the day when it comes to fruition. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you. Yes.
Christine Heinrichs. Yes, those issues of relationships with agencies are very important. And that's been one of the problems with this project that makes me kind of wonder how the bank is going to look at the failure to submit reports, the failure to be able to adequately operate the plant. We have not been able to hire an operator. We've lost, mm-hmm, the two people who knew something about operating it. It's still under a cease and desist order. You know, the history of this plant at this point, you know, it's kind of hair-raising.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The bank is not giving you their dollars. The bank is giving you their interest rate. The board itself and the system and the backing and the payments for it will be a reflection of how the board itself wants to operate. So, you know, the bank is really just a conduit for what the board would like to do.
Amanda Rice, I just want to really clear up some things because the history is very storied and lengthy considering it was 2014 that was put into place.
Yeah.
But we have taken serious steps forward, partially with the help of Mr. Flores, to improve our communication with the various agencies, to address the issues that had come up last year regarding reporting and getting the reports in on time. I believe a candidate for the chief plant operator has been selected. I don't know if it's been offered yet, but they are in the process of doing that. So the history may not be positive, but I see a future that is not all uphill or down into the doldrums, and it's going to take a while to get there. But I think that we have taken some serious steps. They might be small ones, but they are serious ones, and I think that has made a little bit of a difference. And hopefully, going forward, we don't continue to see those lack of communication and other issues that have come up in the past. That's all I wanted to.
Yeah, and I just wanted to mention that as the flavor of change, in some sense. And I'm not going to say that you know, how these agencies feel about you or in any way due to me. I think it's the difference of having your president or your GM face-to-face where they can answer hard questions to folks that have perceptions about certain things. I have never walked out of a meeting in Sacramento where Jerry has not been asked two or three or four or five hard questions. And I think they appreciate the fact that he answers them and that he doesn't hide the ball and says, look, this is where we were, this is what I'm instructed to do, and this is where we'd like to need your participation. That's helped. Amanda's done a tremendous amount of work as well, Coastal Commission members, on just getting, I think, and the board itself has been great at facing up and answering questions. I mean, they have a lot of questions, and I think if anything, I think it's been good to just directly address that. And I think the relationship between the new executive director at the Coastal Commission and the board, the president, the GM, is great shape, period. I mean, it couldn't, there's no, you know, there was a time where it was very tense, to say the least. And it's very good. I think it's very positive. I'm very happy about it. Makes my job a lot easier. Definitely. Okay, so I think I just have a few more, and we're right. See how fast 5 o'clock to 7 goes? And I didn't even get through all these. No, actually, I think that's it. I don't know if there's any other questions. So just to recap, and I know here, let me just recap a bit. I am always available. I kind of feel that having this was when Harry said we need to do this, all in for it. It's not a problem. You pay me. You need to know what you pay for. You need to have your questions answered. I'll do my best. You like them or not like them, but I'm just going to kind of give it to you how I see it. I want you to know also the way I report to the board is different. In past boards, I had a very different approach. Harry's made me account for hours, which is a good thing. Some of my clients do that. So we do that now. It's a big change, even for a small firm like ours, on what we're doing, how we're doing it, how we report it. That was a big change. I think it's been a positive one. And I think these types of forums are absolutely appropriate. So, you know, we can do this as many times as you feel fit. The board feels fit. I do think there's some more enormous amount of challenge facing the board right now and just figuring out what those capital projects are. I think that's probably the most immediate. And I would say that there's political risk that the entire community should take into account, which is simply that things change in Sacramento, and they're going to change really quickly. They're going to change in 8 weeks. I mean, just to give you a little political, put my political hat on, if Gavin Newsom wins in June and he has a Republican candidate, the election's pretty much over. And that will be your new administration, and it will start to be put together very quickly, very quickly. And you want to be at the table when these appointments, these agencies are being put together. And I would suggest that if there are some capable folks that would like to serve from this area on some of these boards and commissions, we need a lot of people to do that, because that's really where the conversations start. So people, I know it's a trek sometimes to Sacramento, but I think people sitting on boards, even your board members sitting on boards and states and commissions, make a significant difference in the communication and where some decisions are made. And I would say participate in that early, and I certainly would like to help in that if I could, depending on who the next administration is. The political risk, I just jumped past that, is we will have new iBank director. We'll have new folks. So I think there's some we should have some certainty on some of these conversations prior to January. That's it, Harry. Thank you.
Well, Dean, we are winding down here. So what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, I just want to ask a question or two.
Yeah.
And then we actually did have one written question that was submitted. But I have a feeling that our general manager might be the person that needs to ask this question, answer the question. So first, under those 2 points, two of the 6 points that you made under legislative, and two of them were recycled water, which I assume means recycled water funding and water management. And someone alluded to earlier how successful this community was in conserving water back in the dark days of the drought. And we have, you know, endeavored at some point in the past to do purple piping down there on Moonstone, but that's about as far as it went on Moonstone Drive. But I'd like to know, with regard to recycled water funding, since you already have a positive appearance to others as to how we have conserved water.
Yes.
What is it that you feel, and you know, Tina alluded to it earlier about off-stream storage, with regard to water use and reuse in this community, gray water systems or whatever, what would you suggest that the district and the members of the community take advantage of that will make us appear more, more up to speed on how to use water as resourcefully as possible, and therefore perhaps get us some kind of funding in that regard?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, you're already seen as the leader. I had this when I took the assignment in Cambria. Bill Monty and I had this running joke with John Laird. So John Laird's from Santa Cruz, and he's our Secretary of Resources, and he's a secretary for the governor. And I was telling him that I work for Cambria, and he was saying, well, they're the second place. Santa Cruz is the top water, and I said, no, actually, you're wrong. And he runs water resources, so just to let you know that. So we ended up being right, and we had a lunch on that. But so I don't think anybody doubts that this community is very resourceful from the conservation perspective. I will say that the world has turned substantially to two things that don't match in some sense, desal and recycle, right? So in some weird way, the world in Sacramento is, from an Orange County perspective particularly, has changed on the desal side. And, but on this side, I think what I would do is I'd like to position Cambria to be a small community district-funded category that allows for recycled water and have some language that simply says, if you're shown to have these five categories, like you save water already, you do these certain things, that you're kind of first in line on the competitive side of it. So I'm talking to Eduardo Garcia now about creating a subcategory, and there's a bill in your package as well on small water systems. That's the kind of language that we need to get into all of the bond measures. It's the reason that this community will never, no, I shouldn't say that. It's the reason the community has not and might not ever get your fair share of bond money, because you're not McFarland. You're not a disadvantaged community in the sense that the way the categories are kind of put. But this is a small community, period. And so I think the key to it is to recognize that small communities have to be at least a portion of the bond that are eligible that others can't participate in. The line is like 3,000 connections or whatever that is. You know, there's just some language that excludes the rest of the state from a very small pot that would have significance for this district. And I think you're going to be happy when you see, hopefully, the water bond come through this year, because I think we're going to win on that and actually have that language. So when the voters do vote on it and they pass it, then you know that there's going to be dollars locked in for this community to compete with in the small district category. So that's how I see recycled grant dollars kind of coming into the district. And I think you have to be in those bonds early. It's the reason LA County always gets some ungodly amount of money, like 40% of every bond, because they just have enough members to work language in that others can't compete for. These districts, and a lot of it has to do with your political representation. I mean, these districts here, nobody cares about Republicans in Sacramento. No one. So if you're Jordan or others, they used to care when you had to pass a budget with 2/3. Then they're the all-important. Abel Maldonado was the most important guy in the world, literally. I mean, you needed his vote in the Senate to get something done. And he could say, Cambria is going to get this. And everybody would magically happen. Today, that doesn't happen. So I think the key to it is to work with members that you know that can recognize this. And there's a bit of a bias, right? When I said I worked for Cambria and I saw Eduardo Garcia, he kind of went, whoa, what, really? I mean, not Delano, not McFarland, or not Arvin, California. You know, they have different views of San Luis, Cambria. They have different views of what goes on here. You know, this is an affluent community. You know, this is not worthy of grant dollars. Pay for itself. That's the bias that you face. And I think sometimes, coming from my perspective as an EJ, poor community, past district, brings a little different flavor to when I tell folks, actually, that community needs a lot of help. And so the key to it is to have that language for recycled. Recycled is going to be the biggest part of the bond, to go back to your original question. It'll be the most money in it. And we just need our category of like $300 million. Eligible. And so let's say we got 30 or 40. That would help the community for a long time, kind of get to some of those needs. Sorry, it's a long answer to that, but yeah.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Dina. One more, and this is the one written question we had submitted. And like I said, I don't think this really is something you can answer, Dean, but maybe more for Jerry. And so, Jerry, Dean was mentioning that you sometimes get some hardball questions in Sacramento, so right here in Cambria. So here's it looks like three questions. And it kind of goes right back to where we started with the first question that was asked from the audience. Have we used the sustainable water facility? How much have we already spent on it? And how much more is it going to take to make the facility operational? And I think that's probably more something that Jerry can answer than yourself, Dean. Is that correct?
Can I start my car as your...
Oops, excuse me.
So yes, we have used the sustainable water facility. We've used it three separate times. How much does it cost to run the facility? You'll see a detailed analysis on funds 39 and funds 40 as part of the finance manager's report as part of the April 19th agenda. We did an audit of that, so we have a much better understanding of what it's cost us from an operational perspective and a capital perspective. That's what the board asked for. That's what the communities ask for. And the third question was, what will it take? What?
How much more is it going to take to make the facility operational?
Well, the facility is operational right now. If we wanted to run it, we could. The only thing that we need to do is put some tanks out there so we can dispose of the brine into the tanks, and then from the tanks dispose of the brine to South County Sanitation District. So the facility is operational. We can only run the facility, though, under a stage three, as you all know. We're on a path right now. We're on a journey, and Dean's talked about that journey, and that journey is for a regular coastal development permit. One thing I did want to clarify about that system, and I'm glad Bob's here, is that system was made for reliability purposes. It was not made for growth purposes. Now, from a policy perspective, if the board at some point in time wants to revisit the 350 issue and release meters at some point in time, those terms and conditions are going to have to be written into the regular coastal development permit. But that facility is built for system reliability, not for growth. We have the Madouse Water Management Plan, if you remember that. Bill Madouse did a really comprehensive plan. And there's different things within that plan that enables us to even meet build-out, whenever that way may be. I won't see it in my lifetime. It enables us to meet build-out even without that facility. And I know that's hard to comprehend, but there are different things that we can implement as far as even when we do, if and when we do release meters, such as gray water and things like that, a zero net gain, which is you can build a house and it will have no impact because you can recycle the water and things like that. So these are good questions. It's always been my understanding. You know, I'm not. You know, I look at issuing of meters from a revenue perspective. I don't have a political view on it. I don't have a growth view on it. I look at it from a point of necessity to help us address some of the infrastructure concerns that we have. I've always said publicly that we need two things, and that's rates that sustain our infrastructure and our operations, and at some point in time to release a certain amount of meters, even a small amount, that would help offset the rates. So it is operational. One other thing real quick is we're really optimistic that at some point in time we can take the data that we have from the sampling, and Harry brings it up at every board meeting, and rightfully so, is the sampling requirements for that system are very extensive. I agree with everybody on that. You know, we get 8 ice chests full of sample bottles. How often, Bob?
Once a month.
And so when the Regional Water Quality Control Board issued us our Title 22 and Title 27 permits, a system like this had never been put into operation. So they took an over-precautious position on the sampling, and rightfully so. But the samples that we're getting back from the system and from the water we're introducing or not even introducing in the groundwater, they're all NDs, they're all non-detects. So where I'm going with this is we've run it for 3 cycles. Once we run it one more time, we're hoping, and we've had some preliminary conversations. I've reached out to the regulatory agencies and said, you know, these sampling requirements are very onerous. It's very expensive to the community. Can we possibly get a reduction? And the answer was, we're receptive to that. And so we're hoping to reduce cost there. So, and that's a long answer, but those are the, I hope I answered the 3 that were thrown at me. So, this isn't my meeting. This is Harry and Dean's and yours meeting, so I don't want to. I was hoping I wasn't going to be asked a question today. But
it all comes back to you, Jared, in the long run, buddy. You got it. Well, it looks like we have. Do you have time for one more question, Dean?
Since you were involved with the Prop 84 DOF grant, it's an audit. Do you know what the status of the audit is? Is it going on since September?
how that money's been spent, how it's been tracked, and so the state got a hold of San Luis Obispo, who was the, you know, they did the administrator of the grant funding, the through the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. So Bob's been working really closely with them, and I think we've addressed everything within the audit, and we've addressed everything, haven't we, Bob?
That's my understanding.
Yeah, Bob, why don't you come up here so everybody can hear you? Mm-hmm. This is Bob Greshens, our district engineer. And really, Bob was instrumental, really, in getting us the $4.2 million for the community. It really was Bob. So,
thank you, Jerry. Yeah, I met with the auditor a couple months ago. I thought we answered all his questions. There's been some communication issues with they changed their phone system, so I haven't been able to talk to him in recent weeks. So I will keep following up with him to check the status. So I'm waiting to hear myself and also to see if he has any further questions for us, but I thought we answered them all back then.
And just to add a little flavor on the audits on that particular issue, on all the issues from Department of Water Resources, is that when you sign up for a grant, you are sign up for an audit. So it's not like anything that is out of the ordinary for auditors. And normally what they're doing is they're actually auditing the administrator. So it's really kind of San Luis more than anything else that, you know, is kind of the receptor of it. So I would say that, you know, it's probably par for the course to answer the questions and then kind of continue to move through their portfolio of what they've given.
Well, Dean, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I will see everybody again soon.
If I could just say this, applaud yourself for being here and making this a very positive and productive meeting. And let's thank Dean for coming down here to Cambria. Everybody have a good evening. Enjoy the great weather. Thanks, AGP.